Michelle Reinen, who is a director with Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, is our guest. So we talk about some topics to maybe keep some people out of a jam here during the month of May. How are you doing these days, Michelle?
Well, I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking, and really looking forward to this wonderful summer that we're going to have upon us, and we're going to stop those scammers from disrupting our fun activities.
We're going to put them out of work today, hopefully. Let's talk first of all about scammers asking for payment by barcode. What should we look out for, Michelle?
Yeah, this is pretty new and fresh for consumers. We've gotten a report already of this new payment method being circulated in Wisconsin. What happens is that a scammer will impersonate a trusted organization. They'll make up a reason why the consumer owes them money, and then they're sending them a barcode by text or email. So this is brand new. We've always talked about wiring money, cryptocurrency, prepaid gift cards, but now it's barcodes. The consumer is told to take this barcode to one of several well-known and legitimate retail stores, scan it at a payment kiosk or checkout aisle, and make the necessary payment there. And so then this type of transaction can be used for legitimate purposes to load cash into digital wallets or cryptocurrency accounts like a Cash App, PayPal, or eCash. But when it's used by a scammer, it transfers the consumer's money directly into an account that's controlled by the scammer. And a scammer will frame this as an easy, convenient way to quickly pay a bill. But it's really a lie. There is no bill that you are paying. This is, again, just the scammer impersonating this business and making up a reason why the consumer owes money.
If this is from your utility and you're a little bit cautious, you should probably just call the local utility, shouldn't you?
Absolutely. That's what we really hope consumers will do. Recognize that this is a scam and that transactions won't be able to be reversed. If they feel that it is all legitimate, reach out to the company, the utility company, the government agency that's being impersonated, whomever it is, directly using reliable resource information off some written document that they have, and follow up and ask questions about the situation. But the scammers are going to try and scare consumers with urgency and high-pressure tactics to act quickly instead of giving you time to pause and think critically about the request.
If it were a small business or a government agency, it'd probably look or feel more legit. Is that the case?
Absolutely. We'd be, if it were a government agency, it'd probably be by letter. Even a business is going to notify you in writing first. They're going to ask for legitimate traditional forms of payment. You could log into your accounts to see the transactions that are needed to be made there. But I guess I want to emphasize one thing that I left out in describing this. I talked about consumers. Small business owners are hit by this scam as well, especially those small business owners that are wearing all the hats of the organization. They're their IT support. They're the owner. They're the retailer. They're the cashier. They are being hit by this scam just as often as consumers are.
Let's talk about fake application fees. What's the latest there, Michelle?
Yeah, again, this is luckily a scam spotlight that a consumer was able to navigate and avoid the scam. They reported it to DadCap that they'd encountered a scammer who was impersonating a landlord and asking for application fees. This scammer posted a fake rental listing on a popular housing website, and they included their own contact information instead of the real property owner's information. So when the consumer contacted the scammer to inquire about the rental property, they were told they needed to submit an application, include a $60 per adult application fee before they could even tour the property. So $60 per adult for an application fee is quite significant, and that certainly put up a flag for the consumer. They avoided the scam by acknowledging the possibility that they were talking to a scammer. They asked the landlord questions about the property, which they were unable to answer. Things like information about the utilities, appliances, available dates to tour the property, and again, followed up on that application fee. And then they requested a phone call with the landlord because all this communication was through that housing platform. They asked to actually have a conversation, and the scammer refused to do that. So using their investigative knowledge by using the internet to search and confirm that the offer was legitimate before they sent any money, they were able to avoid this scam.
That's a big thing there. And what are some things that this consumer did well to kind of avoid it?
Well, again, they used the internet to search to confirm whether the offer was legitimate. And they used resources like the rental company's official website, satellite maps or street view programs, municipal office and property records. They could have reached out to DadCap to see if we had any complaints. That would be an option. The Better Business Bureau, the same thing, would be another option. And just taking time to do the research and not make that payment is really going to be an important step that this consumer took in order to avoid this situation. So we hope all consumers can really stay vigilant about the scams while they're searching for housing or really any transaction that they want to engage with when looking on a platform, knowing that scammers can certainly post false listings, even though that would violate the platform's rules.
Another consumer call to action following storm damage. And I know you and I talked about April being Tornado Awareness Month. We certainly have experienced our share of storms already, haven't we?
We have, and that's why we're really putting this call to action out there, because a number of individuals throughout Wisconsin have been impacted by these storms, and they've needed to activate their plans and get repair work done, whether it be to their vehicle or their homes. That could be the siding, the roofing, the windows, tree damage, any of that. And so with this recent severe weather that we've had, it's resulted in some businesses soliciting consumers through phone calls to offer repair services. And that's perfectly fine unless they are not registered to telemarket or you are on the do not call list. So consumers whose phone numbers are on those lists should not be getting those phone calls. And we really hope that consumers will report that so we can keep the no-call program in play here and minimize that. And this is really a reminder for consumers to add their number to the list if it's not already there, but remind them that a sales call or a text message making a solicitation is a violation of the Do Not Call registry, but that includes offers or appointments for demonstrations, surveys, evaluations, free estimates of roofs, windows, sidings. All of that is part of a scheme that ties to a solicitation of those goods or services, and they're not allowed to be made to consumers who are on the list unless they have specifically consented for that individual phone call. So again, anyone who's receiving these, we really hope that those get reported.
And again, we've talked about it before, but local contractors are usually the way to go unless you have no other choice, right?
Yeah, well, certainly, especially when we're talking door-to-door situations, local contractors, you making that phone call, deciding what the three estimates that you want to get are, talking to your insurance agents, friends, neighbors, who they use, you're going to see the signs in your neighborhood, and you can then be examining how they work during the day, how they pick up. You could talk to that neighbor about how they follow through and how they were with to sign that contract and things. So there's a lot of activity going on in a lot of communities that you can evaluate firsthand and make your list for when you are going to need to turn to somebody. But local, that's going to be a great way to go.
Product safety at garage sales. Now, I saw a whole bunch of signs out this past weekend. It is that season again, Michelle.
It certainly is. I think this last weekend was the big opening opening sale, if you will, to introduce this season. And you can find those great deals and very unique merchandise. And we hope everyone has a good time when shopping. But we want consumers to remember the importance of safety of the products and check for recalls on any items they intend to purchase before they bring them into the house. And this is critically important when you're talking about children, but it can also be important for everyone in the household, because some products could be recalled for fire hazards. And those would be items with rechargeable batteries or electrical cords. You really want to examine old tools that have electrical cords to be sure that they don't have any bad plugs or wires exposed, and evaluate that and take a look to see if there have been recalls on those rechargeable battery packs that can go with some tools and other devices. If you're talking children, you want to be looking for toys that could have chipping paint because that could be a sign of lead. Small parts or choking hazards, sharp edges on old-fashioned metal toys can also be a problem. And then any type of nursery product that you're bringing in because maybe it's a second for grandma and grandpa's house or the aunt and uncle, be sure that those aren't products that have been recalled. And you can do that by going to saferproducts.gov. That's the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission's website. And you can search items by brand or product type, and you can get the whole list of different recalls that have been issued to be sure that one isn't going to be introducing a hidden hazard into the household.
I know many thrift type stores will not take as donations car seats and cribs and those kind of things because they're just never sure whether there's something wrong with them or not, right?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And the crib standards have changed over time because of studies and incident reporting. And with car seats, you can't tell by visual look all the time to know if it's been involved in a crash already. And once a car seat's involved in a crash, it's done the job of safety. And then usually you get a new one. Depending upon that speed and type of crash, and insurance often covers that because they're built for that single crash.
Right, and toys, certainly another thing with, you know, sharp edges and choking hazards and those kind of things too, right?
Yes, they are. I mean, you want to check for that because you can't see lead. I mean, maybe you have a lead tester and you can test that, but you can't see lead, so you have to look for the signs, meaning the chipping paint. And a lot of standards have changed as it relates to toxicity of toys and art materials. So you want to look for those labels. But at a garage sale, you don't always get the box that goes with the game. So you miss some of the warning signs or safety hazards, cautionary information there. And you really need to do the evaluation for yourself because you may not know that this item is intended for children over 3 years old as opposed to because of those choking hazards.
Your visits on the morning show. We've talked a few times about cryptocurrency and the kiosk regulations. Is there an update here for May?
There is an update, and this is pretty exciting as it relates to consumer protection, but Wisconsin recently enacted a law which regulates cryptocurrency kiosks. And just to remind everyone, these can be called currency kiosk, Bitcoin ATMs, crypto ATMs. The machines are often found at gas stations, grocery store, retail stores, or other locations throughout the state. They look like an ATM, but you can buy or transfer cryptocurrency. The reason why this is so important is because scammers often try to convince consumers to use them to make fraudulent payments or deposit their life savings for safety purposes or to keep it secure. And many scammers refer to these machines as government deposit portals, secure kiosks, or safety lockers, or some other made-up names. But it's really just meant to mislead the consumers into this false sense of trust and security. But what everyone needs to know, both consumers and businesses who may have these, is that they will need to pay attention to the posted warnings on the machines, which are now required by this new regulation to be on machines. There's a $1,000 daily transaction limit on the machines, and consumers should avoid being convinced by someone on the phone or through text message to go try and use multiple different machines in order to exceed that daily total. And if a consumer believes that they've been scammed and have used a cryptocurrency kiosk as part of that scam, they should report it right away to the kiosk operator or a local law enforcement agency. And that could be, again, the local law enforcement, like your police department or sheriff's office, the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions, or the Wisconsin Department of Justice. And when I say immediately, really the sooner the better, but within 30 days of that transaction, because timing is of the essence. And if you report this to those two locations, you may be eligible to have lost funds refunded under this new law. So we hope consumers won't be ashamed or embarrassed or secretive about any transaction that they realize after the fact was involved in a scam, and report these things in hopes that they can try and get their funds back.
Well said. Thanks for the information this month, Michelle. We'll talk to you in the month of June.
That sounds great. You take care.
Michelle Ryan joining us from Wisconsin Division of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection on today's morning show here on WRCO.